Welcome to What Should I Do With My Life? Figuring it out from those who seem to have it all figured out. I'm your host, Stephanie Horowitz. When's the last time you stopped and asked yourself, what am I doing with my life? Why am I doing this? Do I even like this? Join me as we hear the inspiring stories of real people to find out what they did and are doing with their lives. Are they satisfied? Would they have done anything differently? Maybe through these stories, we will figure out how to bring more meaning and passion in our day-to-day. Hi everyone, I hope you're doing well and staying safe. Before we begin, just a reminder to rate, review, subscribe to stay up to date on new episodes, whether you're listening on Apple, Google, Spotify, or anywhere else. Now, for today's episode, I'm excited to introduce you to Katya Kolmetz. Katya's spirit and fearlessness in her career journey really began at the age of 19, when she moved from Germany to Hong Kong for a two-year traineeship after high school. That confidence and passion continued to propel Katya forward. She succeeded in the corporate world and ultimately made the brave choice to leave and start her own business. In the episode, Katya talks about her startup, Human Deluxe, and her passion for helping brands and people build trust with others. She recently launched and facilitated a four-week women's leadership program for women in corporate positions around the world, and she works tirelessly to help individuals identify and proudly share their unique strengths. She's a star entrepreneur, and I loved listening to her story. So with that, here's Katya. Hello, Katya.
Hi, Steph.
How are you doing?
Oh, we're at the same time. I'm good. Very good. How are you?
Everything's good. I'm really excited to have you joining me today, and I'm excited for you to share your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. I feel like we should just get right into it. So to start us off, in one sentence, can you please tell a bit about what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I'm founding partner at Human Deluxe. It's a design studio in Berlin. And I have a bit of a corporate background, but what I do now is really run branding and communications projects for all kinds of clients. And I recently designed a leadership program for women to help them accelerate their careers.
So I'm really excited to unpack and hear more about all of these ventures. And I just want to take a step back. And at first, I want to know, growing up, did you have any idea what you would be when you were older? Did you think you'd be a startup founder?
Such a good question. I only started to think about that now because of your podcast. And I listened to some of the other episodes and it was like really interesting. And some people that apparently already had like a vision really early on. But for me, it wasn't like that. So I had a bit of an idea. Like I always enjoyed a bit, you know, the creative side of things, art, like theater and music and painting, this kind of stuff. And I always love people. So my mom told me, like, I rejected all toys. I never like to play with toys. I only like to be with the adults or other kids or anything alive. So from that, you could get a sense into what direction it goes, but I never had the, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer kind of experience.
I love that. I feel like I definitely like toys, but I know I loved adults and schmoozing and socializing with others. But a bit about your background and how you got to where you are today. So I know that you are from Germany, but you've lived and traveled and worked in many different countries.
Yeah, I am actually from Dortmund, which is like the west of Germany, but you don't need to know that place.
I know Dortmund because my grandma's from Dortmund.
No way.
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing.
And don't they have a really good
soccer team?
Exactly.
I was going to say that. That's usually like the only international reference that works. But yeah, I am from Dortmund and I lived there the first 19 years of my life. And then, yeah, right after school, I knew that I wanted to leave. And I kind of packed my bags, I think 3 or 4 weeks after I had my diploma in my hands. And that's when I moved to Hong Kong.
So how does a young woman who just graduated high school, right?
Yeah, right.
Move to Hong Kong. What? Tell me about that.
Very good question. So I think I had this hunger to really do something new and, you know, break out a little. Everything was getting too small and I really wanted to experience something new. I heard about this opportunity of a management traineeship in Hong Kong. So there were European companies that were looking for, like that were setting up in Asia and we're kind of, you know, connecting workforce also from both cultures. And I had the opportunity to do like a 2-year program there, or let's say I decided to apply. And when I was selected, I kind of knew, okay, this sounds like such a great adventure. I want to go for it.
And you were so young.
Yeah, so it was like right after graduation. So everyone was like selecting courses to study. And I also had a program in mind. So I picked a course, marketing and communication, that I ended up studying later, a few years later, in mm-hmm. the Netherlands. I picked it. But then this Hong Kong thing came up and I just thought it sounds like this once in a lifetime opportunity. I'm going to do it now or never. I didn't have the best grades at that moment. So I wasn't sure if they would select me, but I had a really good interview. And I talked to someone who really, you know, put his trust in me. And I thought, okay, a few things I can do it, I can do it. And it was completely different area, actually. It was wholesale and foreign trade. I learned a lot about import-export business, which I kind of knew I wouldn't be doing it forever. It gave me like a very new perspective on things. I still remember like after I came back, I looked at things differently. Like let's say if I went to the supermarket, I knew where the products are coming from because I've been to those factories where they're being produced, but I also knew about the price negotiations or let's say how to make sure there's like no child labor involved and all the quality insurance and how many weeks it takes to ship these things from Asia to Europe. So it was like really, yeah, a great experience to kind of look behind these curtains of, you know, what's actually happening in business operations. How do these things work? So
yeah, it seems like a really amazing professional experience for someone so young. I mean, I think, okay, when I was 18, I went to college. Yeah, I was studying college, but I was having fun on the weekends and weeknights, you know, going out a lot. Did you go out a lot in Hong Kong too?
We had a lot of fun as well. So Hong Kong is a crazy place. And I think you kind of have the best of both worlds, right? It's like kind of you have the Chinese culture, but you also have a lot of Western elements. So you mm-hmm. have also a lot of parties. We had a good time.
That's
living at 12 square meters, but we had a good time.
Oh, man. Well, that's really how you're going to bond. By the way, I hear this crazy bird outside. I don't know if you can hear it. I'm not sure if it'll be
anything.
Picked up in the audio, but if anyone hears a crazy bird, it's outside the window. But
it also has a great story to share.
It wants to be a part of the podcast. It really wants to tell us about its successes. I feel like it says so much about you at such a young age to kind of go on this kind of adventure. Were your family or friends surprised that you did this, or people were like, oh, that's typical of Katya. We're not surprised she would kind of go to Hong Kong for 2 years at such a young age and go on this amazing experience?
I think at that time it was a huge shock because I didn't have that international experience. So I had like, of course, been abroad for vacations, but I never studied abroad, did a semester abroad, nothing like that. I think it was a huge shock. They got used to it.
They didn't have a choice, did they? After your 2 years in Hong Kong, I understand you were in Amsterdam as well. Did you go directly to Amsterdam, or what brought you to another country and what did that chapter look like?
Yeah, so I think at that point, they were not surprised anymore. By that point, like my family and friends had gotten used to the thought that I would be living abroad. And I didn't see myself return to Germany, to be honest. I had an offer on the table to stay in Hong Kong, to continue working there. So it was a traineeship. And we had we went to a business college and we had this practical part, working in the company. But I didn't have a degree, really, like a bachelor's degree. So I still wanted to study. That's basically when I started to look for courses. And I was still interested in the same marketing communications program that I was already flirting with right after school. And I thought, if 2 years later, I'm still thinking about that, it's probably the right thing to do it. Yeah, that's why I moved to the Netherlands. I moved to The Hague to study. And then 2 years, 3 years later, I moved to Amsterdam because I was offered a job at Philip.
And you said you always thought you might have a knack or an interest for marketing and communications from a young age, you said, you know, even before you started the program in Hong Kong. So why do you think that is? What do you think it is about marketing communications that got you into it?
I guess I always had like this creative side of mine, but during school, I was much better in, maths and these kind of black and white subjects. So I knew that I had these two sides of mine, like kind of the logical thinking part, but also the creative side where I just want to explore and do things. It was that program where I thought, wow, that really brings it together, because it was very project management focused and really working with real clients. So getting like briefings from real companies, and then during our studies really figuring out creative concepts to work on that. So I always wanted to work with people and being creative and making things happen, and that's exactly what we did there. So cutting videos and drawing posters, but obviously also working with budgets behind and making sure it has business impact. So I really like that it combined these two sides.
You said that you were working with Philips and ultimately mm-hmm. you ended up working at SAP. So we know those are two right. large corporates. So what was it like, you know, working for a corporate, and what was your favorite part of those kind of positions, and what were things that you less loved less, I should say? My English, it's gotten worse.
In the US, even.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so I was really attracted, I think, by the big brands. So during my studies in the Netherlands, you know, Philips was a huge brand there. I really looked up to them. And also there, I think it had a bit this challenge character. I wanted to see, you know, if I get in, if I can add real value there. And I also always found that these large corporations, you know, would have so many opportunities, because there you have everything, right? You have like the communications people, you have the marketing people, you have people in the business and all the different business groups, technology. So I thought it's a great place like to explore, and especially with like global presence, maybe keep traveling, all of that. What I loved about the corporate experience, both at Philips is actually where I got into tech and into innovation. And at SAP, I built on that. I was like directly looking for a position where I could work more in that space. I actually had the opportunity to work at SAP IO, so the startup incubator of SAP, and really build up the marketing communications function there from scratch, which was amazing. And I think that's what I love. I said in the beginning, like, they have it all. They have the marketing, they have the communications, they have everything. But at the same time, there were quite often, you know, borders and silos. And although I always had the opportunity to work in, you know, the most innovative part of these mm-hmm. organizations, still sometimes the size of the organization was also overwhelming.
Right. Trying to bring innovation into a large corporation, but at the end of the day, it's a large corporation. It's still going to be yeah. bureaucratic, have a lot of rules. You can't just do whatever you want. So when did you make the shift to decide to open up your own company? You created your own startup.
So that was actually, I think, about 1.5 years ago when I really took the leap. I co-founded Human Deluxe together with two designers from my network. I must say it was a long process to get there. So I was flirting with the idea for longer already to start something on my own. But obviously it's like I had an amazing position before. I loved my job. It was very hard to really make that decision to leave and to kind of start from scratch.
Yeah, I was curious, what were some of your fears? What kind of thoughts were going through your head when you were thinking about leaving a comfortable, good job to start something new of your own.
Yeah. So I think the biggest fear were always about, you know, losing something. What am I giving up here? Mm-hmm. Without having the clarity, what you could gain. And that's something that was, that was holding me back, like for a longer time. At the same time, I knew that I could only kind of manifest that vision of like what this new thing could become if I really fully dedicate myself to it. There were so many people saying like, hey, why don't you work part-time and, you know, do it on the side. Mm-hmm. But I, for myself, I knew that I would have to make this really, really this cut to be able to focus completely on something new. And leave all these fears or hesitations behind.
It's so crazy and it's so brave. You must be pretty confident in yourself and your capabilities to say, I'm going to, you know, help co-found a company and it's going to succeed. So what do you think about that? Do you feel like you had a lot of self-confidence?
Interesting question. So I definitely had some knowledge about setting up a company. So I had done it before at university. Mm-hmm. So I also had a minor in entrepreneurship. And then for 1 year, I was setting up a language startup back then, applying for funding or also raising money. And during my time at SAP, I was working with so many startups that were part of the incubator program. I learned a lot, like how to test hypotheses and business ideas and also, of course, problems that other people had, learning from others' mistakes, you know, how to go to market, all these things. So I think that did give me some confidence that I could also do it myself. Mm-hmm. And also learning from own mistakes. So I remember running that language startup. I was very much focusing on marketing. So I was studying that. So I had zero problems in getting hundreds of people excited. So I had like so many customers right away and people that were signing up and willing to pay for it and all of that. But I had more problems on the product side because I had no experience with it. That's also eventually why I didn't continue with it, because I didn't have a strong partner on the product side and I knew I would need that. Yeah, I think that gave me a lot of confidence as in, you know, been there, done that. So next time I'm going to do it better. At the same time, I knew that it's always new and it's always about learning new things. So especially in the design space, that was a new space for me as well.
I want to just talk a bit about Human Deluxe. So I know it's a mm-hmm. design studio and you focus on human brand experiences. So I just want to make sure everyone listening has a better understanding of the kind of services you provide. I know you do some product design, you help startups with branding and telling their story. So can you just share a bit about why that's important? What kind of startups come to you? What does working with them look like for your team?
You know, it's a question that we're being asked a lot. And it's also because we kind of brought up this term of human experience design, or we're trying that out, which is, of course, not as established as user experience design, for instance. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is really bring together the product side and the branding side. So we are looking at it in an integrated manner, because in the past, you know, it was like very scattered. Companies would go to a branding agency or marketing focused agency to work on their brand and their communications, etc. Mm-hmm. And would go get a different kind of consulting services from the product side, or get different kinds of support for the product. We think that like nowadays, these borders are really starting to blur, because mm-hmm. eventually it's all about creating relationships and adding value in the lives of humans, right? And the businesses that will survive are those that have really fostered these strong relationships with humans and have like very strong value in their everyday life. And it's no longer about just that shiny brand or just that product which is easy to use, but it's like really integrated. that's basically what we are helping our clients with. And it's not only startups. I'm talking a lot about startups because I love startups and I love working with them, but we also have like corporate customers and even some from the governmental public space. What I love about working with startup especially is that they are quite often like really have these strong visions and like this very close contact with their customers. So we can help them really manifest that in a brand and in product improvements, like be it their website, be it their new product features or a pitch deck, or sometimes it's a video or a campaign. So it could be any of these elements, but really look at the humans that they're trying to create value for and capturing like the unique essence of their brand and how they want to add value with their product in all their communications and marketing.
It's something needed, and that a lot of companies, it doesn't matter if you're a big corporation or a small startup, need that kind of service, and to work with a team like yours to be able to properly communicate and relate to the consumer or customer that, you know, they're serving.
Yeah. Relate is a very good word also. Yeah. Truly empathize with them and create something unique for them.
Can you give an example of a time where it was the end of the week and you poured yourself a glass of wine being like, yes, this was an amazing week at Human Deluxe? What would have happened?
Yeah.
Pour that bubbly and enjoyed the weekend.
Yeah. Well, actually, it just happened last week, exactly like that. We have recently started a new initiative, a leadership program for women, last week, Wednesday. So my week ended a bit earlier. It ended Wednesday night.
You can pour that wine any night of the week. No
exactly.
Judgment.
And I had already, like, weeks before, like, planned my vacation to start on that Thursday. So I knew, like, once I have run the pilot, I will be so exhausted and really feel like I deserve a vacation. I think that's also very much about how we work together at Human Deluxe. Is we work extremely hard, but then we also celebrate that. So that was definitely a moment where we had to pour ourselves a glass of wine or maybe a few more because it was well deserved.
Can you share more about the leadership program? I understand it was about 4 weeks with 10 women.
Yeah.
So I would love to hear who participated, why, you know, what big takeaways did you get from that program?
Yeah, definitely. So it was actually during the Corona lockdown that I had a bit of time to reflect and all the things that had happened with leaving the corporate world, starting my own business. Yeah, there was one point because you also asked about confidence earlier on, right? And I actually think that through this entrepreneurial adventure, let's say, I did gain a lot of confidence because I had this immediate feedback, you know, that my work is valuable for customers. They are willing to pay money for it, to recommend me to others. I also gained a lot of experience with facilitating workshops, you know, being able to guide teams through a creative process, help them align, make decisions. That was really, really, important experience for me. And also one where I thought, hey, I would have loved to have this kind of confidence and also these skills during my corporate career. And I would have benefited and my teams would have benefited from that so much. That was basically the starting point when I thought, hey, I want to create a program around that for other women who are working at large corporations at the moment, who are really hungry to make, you know, the biggest possible impact with their work, but sometimes feel stuck. And I wanted to give them, let's say, all the tools and techniques that I had learned from design and by starting my own business, to accelerate their careers. That was basically the starting point.
So what kind of content did you cover in the 4-week program? What were some of the conversations about?
Yeah, so every week had one specific topic. So we talked a lot about personal values and how to turn that into leadership principles to kind of make sure that, a meaningful leadership style can derive from really personal values and who you are as a person. And we also talked about or learned different tools to influence relationships, influence team dynamics, but also influence perception. So personal branding plays a big role there, how to make your voice heard. Yeah, everything basically in a very experimental style. So I really wanted to design this as an experience, not just learning or listening to someone who has been through it, but at the same time also experiencing it. And that's why we had we had a very cool group, 10 women from all over the world, from large organizations, many of them from tech, like we had Google, AWS, but also consumer brands like P&G, for instance, or Merck, which is a big pharma corporate. So very different backgrounds, but the women were really like a great community. Like everyone was super open to this experience. So we practiced and experimented a lot. And it was also great to see how they kind of left their comfort zone and supported each other on the way. It was very rewarding.
I'm curious, you and I have talked a bit about this before with imposter syndrome and a lot of people, specifically women, who may not feel worthy or may not feel that they, you know, I'm a fraud. And one of the things you just talked about is that you focused a bit on personal branding. And from my experience, with myself as with friends, I think personal branding is really challenging because I think a lot of women don't want to take up space. We don't want to, you know, take up a lot of attention, call attention to ourselves, maybe stereotypically more so pushing others forward. And as you said, a lot of these women are in tech roles, which are predominantly male-led roles. So I'm just wondering, what were some of the points being brought up or challenges women were talking about as it relates to personal branding and having your own voice?
Yeah, imposter syndrome is definitely something that that most of the women could recognize. Also, it's not only about women. So research is saying that 70% of all humans experience signs of imposterism. So it's kind of a universal phenomenon. But for women especially, and something that that we did in the program was to shift this personal branding topic to the very end of the program. So we already did a lot of, let's say, inner work before we got there, because with branding, there's a huge pitfall, I think. Like many people work on branding and personal branding in a fairly superficial manner. So quite often it's seen at, you know, what LinkedIn picture should I choose? And how can I make my job title sound a bit more attractive? How do I, can I create this perfect CV so people will call me? And all of that also in an authentic manner, and because I want to be real. But I think it's the other way around, right? Yeah, it should really build on who people are, on our identity, and on also behaviors and communications patterns that we have anyways. So there's a lot of uniqueness and valuable things in who these women or people in general are already. And it's more about emphasizing some of these elements and strengthening them and building confidence to also carry them out there, rather than artificially creating this separated personal brand, which then is hard to own because it doesn't feel like
it doesn't feel authentic, or it feels like it's a face you're putting out there.
Right, exactly. And that's basically something that we see in all branding projects. So with personal branding, of course, everyone can relate to it, but also the companies that that we're supporting. Quite often, you know, everyone thinks about branding as something, how can we, you know, polish things and make it look perfect. But it's no longer about that. Maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago, people were still looking up to brands that looked perfect and shiny. But nowadays, it's everything. It's all about authenticity and making yourself also vulnerable. So people know it's real, right? Mm-hmm. And people want to have these relationships. And it's so interesting because this is what is building trust nowadays. If someone is authentic, or if a brand is authentic, And back in the days, it was building trust if there was like a huge corporate office with a shiny, big, expensive logo.
Right.
So it's very counterintuitive, but we really try to help companies and humans there by embracing their identity rather than creating something separate just for the sake of marketing.
It makes so much sense. I agree. I feel like there's a shift in that kind of mindset for brands, big and, you know, companies, big and small, as well as individuals. And I think that today it's more and more necessary to have your own brand and promote yourself. And really, in order to stand out, you don't want that shiny, perfect LinkedIn picture and everything looks picture perfect. But I agree that you really need to be yourself. This leadership program sounds amazing. And I want to turn it back to you as a female entrepreneur running your own company, and you ran this program. What are some challenges you as a woman in this kind of tech startup world, what kind of challenges do you face?
Yeah, very, very interesting question. So first of all, I really embrace the freedom that I have. Like, since I'm an entrepreneur and since I started my own business, the most valuable thing for me is really that I can choose how to spend my time, which people and which projects I can spend my time with, and being able to experiment a lot and trying new things. Of course, there are in every job, there are limitations also for women, because it's something like that is so deeply ingrained in our culture and in society that, even in our communication, that women are sometimes treated differently. So one topic, to give you one example, is there's a difference between promotion-oriented questions and prevention-oriented questions. So that means men are asked more often promotion-oriented questions. Could you introduce yourself? What is your vision? What is it that you're doing? And women are asked more often prevention-oriented questions, which are like, you know, what are you worried about? Or what are your challenges, etc. It's something that we're talking about in the program, but that I'm also trying to be aware of myself, is that this is something that is ingrained in our culture. So I might be receiving different kinds of questions from clients, from partners, from anyone I'm working with, basically, mm-hmm. or talking to, than a male counterpart. It's at the same time, about this specific topic, research is also showing that women who are able to flip it around can be more successful than, someone who received a promotion-oriented question per se. So this is something where I'm trying to empower myself and others by, you know, working on communication style and how to observe these things and how to react to them. To kind of flip some of them around. And in general, I must say I had like a very good experience, especially since I started my own business, because of this freedom of choice that I was mentioning mm-hmm. earlier. So I'm very thankful for the experience, and especially now also with the leadership program, of being able to pay that forwards a bit.
I'm really happy you brought that up, because now I'm going to pay more attention to those kinds of questions and ways of communicating. And everyone, I mean, I hope more people listening to this will also think about that as well. It's super important. So I'm really happy you brought that up. I wanted to know as well, what are some strategies or tips for work-life balance? I mean, you're running your own company. Aside from Corona, you travel a lot as well. Friends, family. My understanding is, you're a co-founder, you don't have a life. You just work all the time.
Yeah, interesting. So you also asked about challenges earlier. And I actually think that this is one of the biggest challenges. On the one hand, there's this freedom of being able to allocate your time the way you want to and work on stuff you're really passionate about. But at the same time, the day still has just 24 hours and there's always so much you could do. I think it's about prioritizing, but then also about setting boundaries. And I think what is most important, for everyone, but also for entrepreneurs, is our health, right? So work-life balance is very important, and it's maybe not as predefined by external factors as for others. So it's also our responsibility to take care of that. Yeah, we can only be successful in a sustainable manner if we take care of ourselves. Yeah, luckily that's something where I have two co-founders, Joe and Nico, who are awesome. So where we have the same opinion about that, something we very honestly and openly communicate about, which I think is most important, mm-hmm. and also prioritize. And that would also be my recommendation, not only to other founders, but to anyone out there, right? Because even if you're employed somewhere nowadays, it's especially with home office, everything is kind of coming together.
Right.
And we have to take care of ourselves.
Agreed. I'm all about that self-care. Sometimes it helps even self-care. Just lighting a nice candle and having some tea next to the computer while you're on a call. I also want to know, what advice would you give to someone who has always been thinking about starting their own venture, but maybe has a comfortable job or is nervous to take that leap? What would you say to them?
Wow. So I'm biased. but I would encourage everyone to give it a try. I think whenever there is a thought that keeps coming back, that is kind of lingering inside of us, there's a reason why that is. And I think we should give it a try, because the biggest factor that is holding us back is usually being afraid of failure. I think that is one thing that is that's an argument that is not valid in my opinion, because especially now with my experience of founding an own business, and it sounds cliche, but I love failure, and it's so incredible to be just accountable towards yourself and maybe your co-founders, and being able to also create things that don't work out. Because every time there's a no or something is not working out, it's a yes at the same time, because it directly gives you the answer of what is working out or what might be working out instead, or what's more likely to work out. And I think quite often and I admire people in a corporate context who are able to do the same thing, but it can be very hard because you are distracted by many, different interests and sometimes conflicting interests. And as an entrepreneur, it's easier for us actually to give it a try because of this accountability. It's mm-hmm. like me, myself, and I, in a way, or me and my co-founders, who decide to, who have a hypothesis and or an assumption what could work. Build it, do it, and it doesn't work out, and then try something else. And I think this just helped me accelerate also my own learning curve so dramatically, and I would never want to miss this experience. And I'm saying this is not the right answer for everyone, but it's the right answer probably for those people who are thinking about starting an own business for a long time already, because there might be a reason why that thought is there.
I love that. I think that's great advice. And I agree that I'm sure for most people, what's stopping them is the chance of failure or things aren't going to go right. But as you said, you're going to learn through it all. And it's a great way to learn how to hold yourself accountable. The last thing I want to ask is, what's next for you? What can we expect from you in the next 10, 20 years? You've accomplished so much already at such a young age. What else do you hope to accomplish in the future?
I love the fact that you're calling me young all the time. Hey. But in general, I think I have kind of identified my true north in a way that I want to create more of these growth for companies, for people. So I really want to witness more of the growth of others, and I want to create more meaningful connections. It's something where I just really found out for myself that it makes me happy to spend my time like that. But that can be in different forms and shapes, right? And at the moment, I have found ways to manifest that in the activities that I'm busy with. No one knows what that will be in 5 or 10 years. So for myself, it's enough to kind of have this, yeah, this North Star that I'm working towards. And at the same time, the uncertainty that I don't know what will happen in the next years, because there will always be new opportunities and new doors that will open. And I think that's also the beauty of it. So I don't have to know yet.
Agree. And I personally find a lot of comfort in that. And I'm sure a lot of people do. And I think that's a big part of this podcast and the point that you don't have to have it all figured out. You don't need to know everything. A lot of things that you never imagined would be on your path end up being on your path, and opportunity, like you said, different doors open. Yep. So this was awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I want to join the next Women's Leadership Program. I can't wait. I would love to. I'll apply. I can't wait to be in touch and see more of what you do, and hopefully one of these days see you the next time you're in Israel.
Amazing. Please keep up the amazing work with the podcast, and I'm so happy to be part of it. Thanks, Steph.
Thanks, Katya.
Hey, all. I hope you enjoyed Katya's episode. A couple of things that really stuck out to me. Katya brought up how if you've been thinking about an idea or taking a certain step for years and it keeps coming back in your head after a lot of time has passed, it's there for a reason. Listen to it. Go for it. And that's exactly something she did. I also thought she perfectly summarized that for those nervous to start a new job or make a change, the biggest fear is losing something without the clarity of knowing what we will gain. And that's the risk that we have to take when we make these kind of decisions. Lastly, Katya emphasized that the best way for us to stand out and shine is not by trying to seem perfect, but by being vulnerable, being ourselves, and identifying what makes us unique and playing it up. So many insights, so much more I could say, but I'm gonna just sign off with that. Bye.